Blog Talk Radio.
Now what the fuck is his name?
Ghost Dog.
What?
Ghost Dog. Ghost Dog?
He said Ghost Dog.
Yeah, he calls himself Ghost Dog. I don't know, a lot of these black guys today, these gangster type guys, they all got names like that they make up for themselves.
Is that true? Sure. He means like the rappers. You know, the rappers, they all got names like that. Snoop Doggy Dogg, Ice Cube, Q-Tip, Method Man. My favorite was always Flavor Flav from Public Enemy. He got the funky fresh flyer flavor. Live lyrics in the bank of reality. I kick the flyers to maneuver technicality. Do a dope track. I love that guy.
I don't know anything about that. But it makes me think about Indians. You know, they got names like Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Running Bear, Black Elk.
That kind of shit.
Yeah, Indians, niggas, same thing.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerve Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerve.
Yes, 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 folks, welcome to yet another edition, a firebrand edition. But isn't it always a firebrand edition? Folks, this is the Afro Nerd, a.k.a. D-Bert, and this is the Afro Nerd Radio Show. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. And, of course, the show features the grandiose, indefatigable, irreplaceable Captain Kirk. We have a lot to get into. It's a 90-minute blast, folks, so stick around. It's going to be a nice, long, edutainment, educational ride. First up, I want to play one of my all-time favorites before we get into Richie Havens, again, the iconic, legendary folk singer that passed on a few days ago. Legendary New Yorker, by the way. I'm going to play some of his music as well. But because of the gravity of our discourse, I've got to do things that's going to get my mind correct. When I spoke to the equally legendary Maceo Parker, when we both did a few weeks ago, his go-to person was Louis Jordan. Everyone has a go-to guy, go-to gal when it comes to musicality. The Oracles, as you may or may not know, is Wilson Pickett. Wicked Pickett is his go-to person. You folks know who my go-to person is. It's Prince Rogers Nelson. So I'm going to go through a quick funk blast, and then I'm going to heat it up even more. This is the acronym DMSR, Dance Music Sex Romance Groove.
We'll be right back.
Okay, again, that was the Minister of Funk, His Royal Badness, Prince DMSR. Folks, as a tidbit, when it gets hot, I'm probably going to play Prince as an opener or some deep funk. Prepare myself mentally to discuss some things that need to be discussed. I had an altercation on another broadcaster's outlet, and I'm going to get into that in a moment. But first, I need my right-hand man, a man that needs no introduction, but he's going to get one anyway. We've got to talk to the captain. You have to bring him in on this because this is going to be a major Bunsen burner moment. I'm going to have to put the grill on someone. I'm going to have to bring out the grill. It's an unchained version of Afro Nerd, an unchained version, because I'm going to break something down based on this difference of opinion. As I said, we need the captain. Captain, it is your time. Let's get to it.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Good
Tiberius.
Yes, I'm here. How do you read me? How do you read me, sir?
We know you're in the field, so we will bear with you, sir. We know you're in the field, but... not bad.
All right. Let me just say something. Can I say something just briefly before you get started?
Oh, yeah, sure, sure.
Okay. Now, I will be addressing the liberal white people in this diatribe and also the menstrual black people. You know who you are. No need to call names. You know who you are. Let's understand something today. I'm going to ask you a few questions, ask the people a few questions. Does a nurse wear a uniform? Okay, that's one. Does a police officer wear a uniform? Does a correction officer wear a uniform? Does a postal worker, should I say a male person, wear a uniform? Yes, they do. Now, what happens if a person puts on a police uniform who is not a cop? You automatically assume that they are a cop, even though they're not a cop. That's why there are laws on the books that protect against this. They call it perpetrating a police officer. You know why they have these? You know why they have these laws? Because perception is reality. And there's power in the perception of being a police officer. So let's understand that. Now, what we call fecal pop, which we call hip-hop attire, fecal pop attire has the tendency to be thug attire. So let me ask you a question. Do criminals have a uniform? Let's be honest now, liberal white people, menstrual black people. Now, this does not mean that a person wearing a suit may not be a criminal. But chances are, when they arrest somebody for mugging, killing, murder, selling drugs, selling guns, or whatever these thugs do, they do not have on a suit. They have on certain attire. My friends, so if you do not want to be profiled in any way, shape, or form, you should not really have on this attire. Now, in a perfect world where we could read people's minds, read a person's mind. You could wear whatever you want, but we all know this is not a perfect world. We cannot read a person's mind. So the reality of this is perception is reality, and how you are perceived, that becomes your reality, and that's what it is. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd. Let's get it started.
All right, let's get it started. Again, ladies and gentlemen, this is Afronerd Radio, the Midweek in Review edition. As you can tell, I don't know if you can tell, because we have quite a firebrand type of discourse, and you're welcome to join in to this discourse at 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Expanding a bit from where the captain just graced us with his monologue, expanding it a bit. What he's referencing was a call that I made to a Sirius XM radio host by the name of Shawn Renee. She runs a program, God bless her, called Coco Mode. I might have played some clips before. I've called her here and there. Kudos to her because she was able to get an expanded hour. Before, she just had a one-hour show. Now she has a two-hour show, and now it's on Sundays, again, courtesy of Sirius XM. She is the daughter of veteran radio broadcaster Joe Madison. So that is to be respected. I'm not into lambasting folks. I'm not into a lot of negativity. I don't really want to do that. And by the way, my apologies again. I always do this with the opening segment. Some, you know, we don't have the editing equipment to the specifics that we would like to. I think folks understand our nature, our humor. So that beginning clip from the classic Ghost Dog movie, that was a pretty abrasive clip, abrasive, acerbic humor. So pardon us for that. So on occasion, we're going to have some curses here and there, not necessarily from the host, but some of the material may get a little blue. Anyway, back to the Coco Mode show. I called in this past Sunday. The topic was a bit muddy, to be honest with you. The topic was a bit murky, it was a bit muddy. And I really should have had my better instinct, or used my better instinct, not really called in. But I'm always up for a challenge. So I'm not afraid of people. But I guess the reason why I should not have called in, because I didn't feel comfortable with the topic, because I thought that it wasn't specific enough. And sometimes I'm assuming that there's a clear understanding between individuals when you get into a conversation. What is he talking about? I'm assuming there's certain things that people just know. I mean, if I talk to someone, a stranger, I'm assuming we both know that 2 + 2 = 4. Let me repeat that. I'm assuming that 2 + 2, we both know or are aware. We can have our differences, but there are certain basic rules that I'm assuming most folks are aware of. Or the person that I'm opening up a conversation with, I'm assuming that we can agree on some basic premises. I'm not going to make that mistake again. What happened with this, again, I thought the topic was a bit murky. She was talking about the tragedy that occurred last week with the Boston Marathon. One perp has been killed. The other one, and we spoke about this on our last show, he is in custody with a gunshot wound to the neck. These gentlemen are considered Caucasian, but they are also Islamic. So she expanded the conversation to a nature of profiling. What does profiling mean? There was, of course, was the dark-skinned comment that John King made. She's really wrapping up this specific issue with a number of different other issues. So when I called in, it didn't go well. And part of it is based on my natural inclination to be respectful. And I'm always going to be respectful. But on another side, I'm going to have to be a little bit more stern, a little bit nastier, respectfully. I'm going to have to be a little bit nastier in a respectful way and not be so passive. I respect other broadcasters. I really do. This happened last time with Mr. Redding, the Rob Redding Show. When people play with you, they play with you and they are dishonest. They are disingenuous. What is Afriner talking about? I'm going to play this clip. I want you to analyze it. When I unpack it, when the captain unpacks it, I defy you to atomize how we decipher what happened. Shouting out Michael, I think Michael Crawford, his word is deconstruct. I'm trying to not take the gentleman's word. Words. He has a word that we love. It's called, he says it, you cannot deconstruct this argument. I defy you to deconstruct this argument. When he says that phrase, it's a thing of beauty. And I'm trying not to use the term deconstruct. I'm trying not to bite, but I might have to bite. I'm trying to say atomize, disassemble, whatever. Deconstruct is a bad word. Bad in a good way. It's a bad word. Okay. Enough of me with me just waxing on and on. This is AfroNerd conversing with Sean Renee of the Coco Mode Show. And then afterwards, it's about an 8-minute clip. I'm going to play the thing in its entirety because you have to understand what the hell happened and what the captain was talking about. About profiling, uniforms, and thuggery. Let's get to it.
All right, we're going to head to Queens, New York. What's up, Afro Nerd. What's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Listen, a lot of what you're saying I agree with, but I think with our community, with black folk, we're suffering from political correctness like everybody else. I think we need to get to a point where we are not so politically correct and we're more about honesty. Juan Williams, if you remember, caught hell and lost his job, his gig at NPR, because he made a statement about, you know, if I'm on a plane and I see someone in Muslim garb who's identifying himself clearly as a Muslim on a plane, I become a little nervous. He admitted that. The folks at NPR says NPR said you can't do that. So then they came back at him and said, well, what if there were young blacks in the street, like what you just said earlier, and they're dressed in hip-hop attire, would you have a right, would a person have a right to be nervous about that? So, and the honest answer is, as you said, yeah. You would be nervous if someone is dressed in hip-hop attire, looking somewhat thuggish, as if you're not supposed to have a natural reaction to that. It's not about being black. It's not about being of Middle Eastern origin. It's about your presentation. In other words, you can't just go off on somebody just because of their ethnicity. There's got to be a whole bunch of other things going on with that that might make someone feel a little bit uncomfortable.
But that's not always the case. You have to admit that's not always the case. Because if what you're saying, for example, because you're just in a sense sort of contradicting your point by using the two examples that you did. Number one, if you're going to say, okay, a young person dressed in hip-hop attire, and those were your words because I would never use that. I don't even know what that is. I'm dressed in hip-hop attire if that's the case today. You know, if you're seeing someone, but you know, and by the way, let me just point this out. I said the way that they – what they were wearing and the way that they were behaving. They're cursing, you know, talking all kinds of crazy stuff. These are the things that make me nervous, not just the attire. And if you are a person of Middle Eastern descent, you as an individual, just by virtue of being of Middle Eastern descent, does not mean that you have done something.
I agree. I said that.
Right, but you're saying that you're saying that he was justified in that expression because and in the same way that I was justified in what I said, because we have to understand that it's not just the skin color, it's something that person has done that causes us to feel this way. And there's a difference. If you are a Middle Eastern person, all you have done is to be who you are. You've not done anything.
That's correct. I also believe in stop and frisk in New York. And even those in Chicago, the black community in Chicago, are asking for stop and frisk because we have to deal with what's happening in our communities with this the amount of crime that's occurring. We don't want to be stopped and frisked. You can't stop somebody just because they're black.
Mm-hmm. No. So why do you stop them and frisk them?
I'm sorry?
Why do you stop them and frisk them?
You would stop and frisk them if they're young, if they're black, if their pants are sagging, if they have a whole palette of what someone would consider to be thuggish or in the criminal
attire. And who makes the determination as to what is thuggish and what is criminal attire?
Well, that's pretty easy to do.
No, who makes the determination? You?
I don't know.
I'm saying, put the music down for a second. I got to go with this for a second. You are saying that it is appropriate, and you believe that if someone has a whole palette of things that you describe that would indicate that they could be of trouble. I'm saying, who makes the determination of what is on that palette? You? Me? I got a young brother in the studio right now. How old are you, Anthony? Just real quick. 33? Don't look but 19 years old if I look at him. So who determines whether or not I could, you know, be young guy?
Well,
you know,
well,
I could be a little afraid. He got on jeans. They're a little loose. Do I stop and frisk him? Because what I'm looking at right here is a 33-year-old man who is behind the window helping run this show.
Not you, but law enforcement does have a profile of what comes in. I've spoken to people who work on the law end of things, and they would break down telling me that they would see the same uniform coming into the police station. That's what I mean by being politically correct and being honest.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your call. We're coming right back. Stick around. To bias in America, racism in America, whether or not people of color suffer from these things, I think so. I think it's very clear if you've been on Facebook or Twitter or online at all, and you've read the reactions to the news that came out regarding these Boston bombers. I mean, these were not, you know, it's interesting. They are Europeans, but they're Eastern Europeans, so somehow they don't count, you know, toward the whole, they're not really white, you know, white, like French, you know, German white. So we can dog them out a little bit, and God, they're Muslim, so, you know, that just makes it all right. Let's just call them all kinds of names. And I'm just curious, we're all black. Well, most of us, some of us are black folks. So I'm just wondering, you know, hey, where are our biases? Afro Nerd called in earlier and said, we're too politically correct. You know, we don't like to say what's real. We don't like to admit that, yes, we are biased and that there are some justifiable reasons for our bias. Is it Mignon from Maryland? We got the phones up. Marilyn Mignon?
Yes. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. How do you pronounce your name?
Mignon.
Okay. I said it right. Okay. So what do you think? What do you think?
Well, two things. The gentleman that just spoke is on a very slippery slope as far as I'm concerned. It's very dangerous. He's saying it's okay to profile kids or young black people based on how they're dressed. And that's a dangerous way to go. I mean, my God. I teach at an HBCU, and whether it's my honors kids or seniors or freshmen, many of the young men are dressed, according to him, thuggish, and immediately should be frisked.
Well, and let me tell you something. Yeah. And let me tell you something about him. And I'm familiar with him. He has a website. I kind of know what he is. He calls in every now and again. You know, all it's going to take is for one crime to be committed by a black man in a suit, and they'll be profiling him, too, and he'll be screaming and hollering about it. I mean, you know, it's foolish. Right. It's foolish. But go ahead. So I don't even want to give him any more.
I understand. Well, anyway, my first point was...
It's foolish. All right. Man, it's like picking ducks from a barrel. All right, folks, again... Welcome to Afro Radio, a.k.a. Afro featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, don't be scared. The water is warm, as they say. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. You know what? Can I get my skillet sound effect when I want to roast someone? I'm trying to keep it cordial, folks, but Where is this damn thing? All right. All right, listen. This is the deal, folks. I'm going to try to make this brief but very concise, hitting a number of different things. Number one, we've got to start to respect ourselves. And I'm not really into racializing everything. But we're going to have to start respecting ourselves as black folk, as people of color, and having the ability to listen to points of view you may not necessarily agree with. There's a type of hegemony. There's a type of hegemony, and I've mentioned this before, and that's the reason why we came up with this show, in regards to how black people are supposed to think. And that is why urban radio is on the decline even as we speak. There's a certain one-size-fits-all for black thought that is crippling the black community. And as I said, political correctness is crippling and killing the black community. The inability to be honest and to play games. When she said, well, first of all, notice how the opening sequence, the opening segment was, we have someone from Queens, Afro Nerd. Oh, Afro Nerd. Oh, I'm coming. I'm coming for you. Gotcha. I'm coming for you. She knows who I am. And it's a discomfort. I'm used to it. I am used to it. But what does that mean? It means she knows I'm a contrarian. I'm going to hit you hard. And I'm entitled to my opinion. And there are other people who think this way. Dr. Cosby came out, we're going on 10 years from that infamous 2004 NAACP 50th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Topeka case, that gala. And he blacked out, as we say on the street, he blacked out and had a moment of clarity because he could not stand being disingenuous. She is still in a disingenuous mode. When you say, I don't really know about, I don't really use the term hip-hop attire. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. You're being phony. As the grandiose captain just said, everyone, especially those who have a vocation, they have a uniform. Believe it or not, when one decides to go into the criminal criminal vocation, it is a type of career. It's a poor career choice, but it's a career, and you know what? There's a uniform that goes with it. If you want to be a professional, a doctor, a lawyer, a fireman, a policeman, a airline pilot, there is literally a uniform waiting for you. The reason why I hesitated in speaking to her about who makes the decision as to what is considered hip-hop attire is because I'm assuming we're on the same page. I'm assuming she knows what hip-hop attire is, but she wanted to be phony. I'm a nice guy, ladies and gentlemen, so I didn't want to get nasty with her. But those days are over now because people are dying and we still want to play these games. If I were to get into a nasty mode with her, respectfully though, a nasty mode, I would have said, wait a minute. Statistics, habitual behavior, repetition has deemed what is hip-hop attire. The Oracle, the tangential producer of this show, who also moonlights as my father, I say laughingly in a jocular sense, he is a professional hairstylist. He's a barber. He does both genders' hairs. He's been doing it for quite some time. In his establishment, it's the interesting thing about being in his profession. Your clientele is comprised of everyone, literally, from politicians to professionals to doctors to drug dealers. Literally, everyone has to come through the barbershop. He will tell you
that there is a uniform because he has clearly seen it. And many of our young folk have actually raised the uniform to being a very much a codified thing. He spoke to me recently and said that one of his associates at the shop that comes in, a man of the street, so to speak, when it was time for him to be clean, so to speak, to clean himself up in a street way, he was in awe of how meticulous and how codified the look is. It's a whole look. It's a hip-hop street look. Your hat's cocked to the side. Your pants are sagging. You have a do-rag underneath. You might have a lot of jewelry. Your pants are ill-fitted. We know what the look is. She wanted to pretend, I don't know what the hip-hop look is. I don't know what it is. I don't know what you're talking about. You're being phony and disingenuous, and we can't be honest that people are paying the price for this. During the broadcast, you heard people say, the cops are criminalizing our youth. No, the youth are criminalizing the youth. If you insist on putting on the uniform of criminality, you might get profiled. The other half of the conversation was, she didn't want to agree. Again, this is my fault in assuming and making assumptions. And you know what they say when you assume something. She doesn't believe, and many blacks do not believe this. Not all, because I qualify my words very carefully. Many blacks, not all, but many, go by the notion that there's no such thing as a profile. Everyone has a profile. Meth addicts have a profile. Wall Street criminals have a profile. Skinheads have a profile. Islamic fundamentalist terrorists have a profile. Everyone has a profile. But when it comes to us, because of faux pride, we say, I don't know what a profile is. I don't know what a profile is, Captain. I don't know what hip-hop attire is. This is the problem with many of our folk and our media. This dishonesty, this disingenuous mindset, this one-track thinking, our music is disarray, our economic standing is in disarray, our educational standing is in disarray. At every indices that we can point to, we are not winning. And you want to know why? Because of this mindset that is singular. It's like putting blinders on a horse. One-track thinking. I called up, talked about being politically correct. What does she do, Captain? She gives me political correctness. She gives me political correctness. Captain, we're going to go to a musical break. I want you to say your piece on this. I'm going to play a little bit of the iconic folk singer, Richie Havens. This is what we do on this show. Richie Havens should have been played on a lot of black stations. But we're so one track, one way to be black. Poor Mr. Havens will probably not be played on urban radio. But we'll play it here from the Afro nerd who people will say is not a black guy. I am amazed and appalled. I am unchained, Captain. From this day forth, you folks better be ready. I'm not playing anymore. I've been holding myself back on how I really feel. It's done. After this conversation, thank you, Shauna Renee. Thank you, Miss Renee. Thank you. Because I finally figured you out. Captain, your thoughts.
Can you hear me, sir?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's my point. This is, you have two sides to this argument. And here's, we're going to.
Hold on one second, Cap. It's hot. Oh, it's too hot. Go ahead.
Yes, you have validation versus invalidation. This, to her side, gives her some validation. But technically, when you're dealing with stopping somebody, most of these stops, from the standpoint of the laws that are on the book, are illegal. Yes, this is the truth. we have laws on the book, on the books, that protect humans, human beings, from these type of stops. All right? It's the amendments. It's in the amendments. That's the reality of it. But here's the other side of this now. As I said before, in a perfect world, this is not a perfect world, the reality is you are going to be profiled to a certain extent. Okay? A black man can wear a suit, and he may get stopped. But if a black man, and this shouldn't be the case, but it is the case, all right? Should not be the case, but is the case. Now, let me repeat that again. A black man could wear a suit. Yes, he may get stopped. But you, as the same black man, you running around with your pants hanging off your butt, you have a do-rag on, you know, you have on the hip-hop attire that we spoke about, chances are you will be stopped more. That's the profile. You know why that's the profile? Because when it's time to arrest somebody, that's what they look like. That's what the thug looks like, the real thug. Now, you might not be a criminal. You might just be hanging out having fun. But you fit the profile. That's the problem with it. Let's be honest now. That's the reality on it. Now, in a perfect world, that person should not be stopped. But tell all those people there in Chicago who are getting shot down every day. Chicago, Atlanta, Liberty City in Florida, and other parts of here in America, that it's a perfect world. They'll laugh at you. That's all I have to say. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yes, we're going to play quickly Mr. Richie Havens, one of his hits, Here Comes the Sun, which was a George Harrison hit, actually, a George Harrison penned song. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Mr. Havens. But I just want to, again, just to kind of wrap this up, talking about the phoniness, Captain, and we've talked about this ad infinitum. She said earlier in the broadcast, the part that you didn't hear, ladies and gentlemen, about her having a bit of a nervousness or queasiness about being around young black males. If she's a single black woman walking around, or if she's by herself walking around, and she encounters black youth, heck, even Jesse Jackson had made the same comment. When you're not going to be politically correct, and you're going to be honest, you will admit to these things. And she said, if you remember, Kathy, she said that when I mentioned the Juan Williams case and how when he was ousted from NPR for him having thoughts, they came back to him and said, what about black men in with these sagging pants being profiled? They thought he was going to be tribal and come back with a different answer, because they were equating the two. The media had made that equation. When I made the equation, oh, no, you're contradicting yourself. I'm not contradicting myself. The media brought that to Mr. Williams' attention, telling him, hey, black man, this is when you get profiled. Then she says, oh, well, you know, when he has his suit on, a suit and tie, and he gets profiled, he gets pulled over, he'll change his tune. Well, you know what, Ms. Renee? I'm going to have to wait for that to happen. When I wait for that to happen, Shaquan and Raekwon are still going to be pulled over. See, we have to wait for that to happen. I'm not saying it can't happen. But is it happening enough? Captain, can we stop talking about the exception and not the rule, ladies and gentlemen? You're learning something here. These arguments, to Michael, my apologies. These arguments cannot be deconstructed. I defy you to deconstruct these arguments because you cannot. That's Michael Crawford, patent pending. He's coming to Blog Talk soon. I'm going to welcome him with open arms. He's nastier than me. He's nastier than me and the captain. This is for real. So it's going to get even hotter. And I'm going to welcome this man with open arms, because I don't agree with everything he says, but I'm in the 80 percentile zone. Captain, this is Richie Havens. Ladies and gentlemen, iconic folk rock singer,
played here on this black station. Here Comes the Sun. We'll be right back. Let's groove. Again, was Here Comes the Sun, a George Harrison tune initially, and that was the legendary folk singer Richie Havens, a New York native, New York Brooklyn-born individual. We have a call. I'm going to get to the call in one moment. Captain, you know, I'm thinking that Ms. Renee's dentist or gynecologist, I assume that if she goes to the doctor's office and sees Dr. Shaquan Jenkins, mind you, I've never seen or heard of a Dr. Shaquan, Dr. Lakeisha Wilcox. I haven't seen that yet. I'm not saying it hasn't happened. But if she, can I assume that her doctor, she'd be comfortable walking into the doctor's office with a do-rag and gold teeth and a hat cocked to the side? Come on in, Ms. Renee. We've been waiting for you. And she will just sit there and say, oh, that's an interesting outfit he has on. Or would she run the hell out of there like an episode of F Troop? Please, people, can we stop this? Can you imagine? She's making it seem as if you're not supposed to acknowledge it at all. Oh, that's an interesting outfit. I'm going on a plane and I see that the pilot is dressed this way. Oh, that's interesting. That's a fascinating outfit. That means nothing. It means nothing. Please, people, please. When the stop and frisk thing is going down, we can talk about this, but stop talking about it as if it's existing in a vacuum. The stop and frisk program is existing when crime is at an all-time high in some of these urban areas. They're coexisting. The stop and frisk coexists with the high crime rate with black and brown folks. Our young men and women are dying. It's not happening in a vacuum. It's not. It's not 1950. 1950, right on. My power fist will be on. It's a different time, and you cannot discuss one thing without the other. But somehow, they managed to do it. Let's go to the call. And I'm off of this. The next topic, I'm going for the Tuskegee women. This next story is going to flip your Caucasian hair hat. Let's go to the call. I'm unchained, ladies and gentlemen. It's over. I'm no longer this. I'm polite, but I'm going to be a little nastier. Welcome to After the Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, 703.
Hey, what's going on, D-Bird? I'm Bison from D.C. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. I'm on fire.
I hear.
Sir.
I'll do it quickly. I just got back from Afghanistan. I've been in Iraq. And the reason I say that, when you're outside the bubble of America and you see what comes from America and when you see us, we literally look like savages when it comes to music. I mean, anything else, separate from the president, but anything else, entertainment-wise, be it reality television, music videos, it's like we stopped evolving in 1985.
Wow.
And I'm being serious. I'm old enough. I remember when hip hop started. I've seen them all walk around Howard's campus. So I don't need any lectures from anybody telling me about hip hop. Been there, done that. When it was real hip hop. But I think the problem is, somewhere along the way, somehow hip hop culture has become black culture, and black culture is a lot much deeper than hip hop culture. Black culture is from the South, it's from the West Indies, it's a myriad of sources. But at the end of the day, what has happened, I think the elders have become afraid of the children, and they're afraid to speak up, and we're dealing with the consequences of, you know, multiple generations of babies raising babies with no boundaries. And this is where we are right now. I'll hang up and listen. You're doing a great thing.
You know
I'm
what?
Still here.
Hold on one second. I ask you a question. Being that you're a military man, can I ask you a question? Give me an honest answer if you can. I know you'll give me an honest answer. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, listen. I made a comment. See, this issue is deeper than you can ever know. I mentioned earlier that there's a mindset. You perfectly encapsulated the minstrel industry. That's a worldwide, multi-million, multi-billion dollar industry. The minstrel black image 2013 it's like the only moneymaker right now. Richie Havens was a man of color, black man, but he was perceived to be a little odd. What's this black guy doing folk music for? You see how this works? We have this box, and if you're outside the box is comprised of the minstrel mindset and victimization mindset. When you call these stations up, or when you notice how the skeletal inner workings of urban radio, a lot of it has to do with this dishonesty, this phoniness. And
well,
I'm sick of it.
I left terrestrial radio a dozen years ago because I saw where it was heading. You had a handful of owners owning so many stations, and then syndication came in. That killed the local DJ. I think maybe New York is probably the last bastion where you have, you know, mostly local DJs who can kind of bring the community ills or triumphs to the station. Now everything's syndication is all about numbers And once upon a time, you know, if I was in New York, if I was in D.C., if I was in Memphis, or if I was in Chicago, you could hear the regional differences on air in regards to the music or in regards to the news, what comes out of it. Now, you know, everything's syndicated. You hear the same songs in Flint, Michigan, D.C., L.A. It's vanilla across the board. And, you know, what they say, bad news sells and controversy sells. It's been selling for at least the last 15 years, and that's what you have.
Well, let me ask you one question. I want to get to this question about you being in the military. I've made this comment on a number of stations, and you look at me like I'm crazy. They have said that Chicago violence is likened to 70s Beirut. So when I said, listen, it appears that as you talked about this, the elders are not coming into the community. We have this fantasy that black men are going to come in with their white hats on white and white horses and talk to these misguided gangbangers and get them straightened out. We are dying in the hundreds, sometimes thousands in some of these places in America, right? I said if there needs to be an intervention, would it be beyond the pale for there to be a military intervention like we intervene in other areas that we deem to be dangerous?
Well, let me ask you this. I think you probably need to talk to the Oracle and ask him how was Chicago after the riots in 68. I know the military sort of came in New Orleans after Katrina, and it can be a short term, but as soon as the last tank leaves, you're still going to have, you know, the trouble of just walk right back on the streets. Like when you have in every city, you know, when crime spikes in different areas, they'll bring out spotlights and the increased presence. You know, and the dope dealers just go somewhere else. So to answer your question, short term, yes. Long term, I'm not so sure.
All right, I just want to make sure that people don't think that I'm crazy. I'm bringing it up because the numbers are high, the babies are dying. They're going to keep on dying. The collateral damage is occurring even as we speak. And when you bring up something that might be real, no. You can't do that.
Hey, David, I'm going to leave with this quick thing. About 3 or 4 years ago, I read in a post or some paper, they did a series on the number of blacks who've been murdered for like a 10-year period. And I think the number was astronomically high. I'll just say 50,000. When you start quantifying the number of blacks who've been killed by other blacks, I mean, that doesn't really, but let's just say by other blacks, it will equal or even surpass the number of people killed, soldiers killed in Vietnam.
I can believe it.
And you start quantifying like that, that's scary. That's genocide. Let's call it what it is. And we're doing it to ourselves. Thank you.
I couldn't say any better. Continue listening, man. We appreciate your support. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Captain, I want to bring you in on another topic. Wow, time flies. You got another half hour. We haven't even gotten through any of this stuff. Let me first talk about Richie Havens briefly. I got to give this gentleman his respect. And then I want to talk about the women of Tuskegee University, formerly Tuskegee Institute, which is actually the sister college of my alma mater, Hampton Institute, a.k.a. Hampton University. We don't even know where the line is anymore, ladies and gentlemen. When I talk about this, it's about the Rick Ross issue, but I'm going to expand the Rick Ross issue, the hip-hop artist in quotes, what has happened recently at Tuskegee's campus. All right, but first, Richie Havens. Richie Havens, phenomenal songwriter, phenomenal guitarist, and actually his music is closely aligned to his activism. Now, I don't want to use the term relic with him, but it almost comes off like that when you think, and I mean it in so much of a respectful way, ladies and gentlemen. I use the term relic because it's very rare that you see this type of artist today. An artist that actually writes songs, that emotes, that puts out a type of music that really goes beyond just foolishness. He came about in the mid-60s, reached an apex in the late 60s through the Woodstock Festival, where he had all of these, I mean, it really came to a crescendo. His opening performance is legendary. But there were so many. I mean, you're talking about a superstar event. I mean, Woodstock is pretty well known for the historical record. I mean, there's a lot of drugs and a lot of flower power. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. You're talking about tumultuous, the close of a truly tumultuous period in our history. All these political deaths, high-profile deaths, whether it's the Bay of Pigs, and you had Cuba on the scene, you had JFK dies, MLK dies, RFK dies, Malcolm X passes, the Civil Rights Movement, you can even throw in the gay activism, the women's rights movement. It was the Vietnam War. It was a crazy time. And Richie Havens was in the middle of this performing folk rock music with soul. And we really have not seen that so really do this. Maybe you might want to throw, she's a phenomenal performer too, but someone like maybe Tracy Chapman, that talent, still a shadow in compared to him. But I think it should be noted that, you know, we do play urban alternative music. And this would be, he would be considered the godfather of urban alternative music. And this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. He is to be respected. He died at 72. He's been touring for over 45 years. And he had, from my understanding, he had kidney problems. He even wrote on his Facebook page that I'm going to slow down on the touring. This was in last year. And then, unfortunately, he expired at 72 from a heart attack. So our respects, condolences go out to the Havens family. Quintessential New Yorker. And it's unfortunate that we may not see his level of talent again. All right, Captain, going from the icon to the decon. Wow. It is what it is. And we talk about this. Your urban radio is not going to talk about this stuff, folks. It's not. Something has to be done. This is a topic you would figure that would be brought up. What I'm talking about, what recently hit the net within the last couple of days, they have footage of Rick Ross. Now, those who are familiar with Mr. Ross, he's been around for a number of years. He took his name from, I believe, a criminal. Just as 50 Cent took his name from a real 50 Cent. Rick Ross did the same. Anyway, Rick Ross, actually, the performer, was, from my understanding, a corrections officer. But you have to hide that now. Maybe 25, 30 years ago, you didn't have to hide that profession. But in the hip-hop world now, where being a criminal, having a criminal street edge is, I guess, almost necessary to sell records. Or, pardon me, to sell MP3 files. No one's selling records anymore. You have to hide these kind of things. So Mr. Ross got into some hot water a few weeks ago because he wrote this song, and it was on radio for a minute, and then it was pulled. It was an acronym, I think, O-E-U-O or something, I think it is. I don't want to sound too naive about it. What is the name of the record? It is an acronym. U-O-E-N-O. U-O-E-N-O. The in the lyrics, he talks about using the street drug Molly, unbeknownst on a woman. She's drugged. He implies that he has sex with her without her knowledge, and then he goes about his way. So he essentially rapes this woman on wax. He was called up on it. He doesn't acknowledge it, really. He gives a half apology, using terms like the pretty ladies, you know, the sexy ladies. We wouldn't disrespect you. The hip-hop community would not use the word rape. Listen, I can use the term murk. I can use the term wipe out. I can use all kinds of euphemisms to say I'm going to kill you without saying kill you. He used street terminology to rape someone on wax, and he did not want to own up to it. A number of white females, I would assume from the liberation, women's lib segment of society, came in. and said we're not going to tolerate disrespect. Now, again, I'm not into talking about race, but I'm bringing race in this context because it was white women that came up, that boycotted Reebok, that brought this to the attention and said, hey, you can go to the YouTube and look at the footage of this, Captain, and our audience. I didn't really see any black or brown faces there. I saw mostly white women who were very commanding, very clear about not being disrespected. So Reebok heard the call. Mr. Ross lost his $5 million contract with Reebok. This goes on. Now, I mentioned the fact that there were not any black faces, to my knowledge, that were about this boycott, as it were. Move forward, a week later, 2 weeks later, there's video footage of a concert that took place on the legendary HBCU campus, Tuskegee Institute, now Tuskegee University. Again, Tuskegee, known for the Tuskegee Airmen, Booker T. Washington, who is perhaps the most famous graduate of my alma mater, Hampton University, graduated from Hampton, went on to found Tuskegee. There's a lot of history with Tuskegee University. A lot of pride with Tuskegee. Someone needs to have a sit down. Someone needs to have an intervention, Captain. Contact. Maybe I'll do it. Now, maybe I will do it. I said it, I'll do it. Contact Tuskegee. Someone needs to sit these women down. There has to be a sit down for prospective scholars. These women are going to an HBCU of renown. And at this concert, they're clearly reciting the lyrics, the rape lyrics of Mr. Ross's song with reckless abandon, smiling in some kind of weird orgasmic state, singing the rape song. Clearly, even the performers put their heads down. Captain, explain this to me. What is this? Captain, are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you
explain
hear me?
This to our – yes, I got you. We hear you. Explain this for our audience. What are we dealing with?
Well, Rick Ross is a star. So he may have – when you're a star, you have a tendency to have power over other smaller heavenly bodies. So these black women with their heavenly bodies have been mesmerized by Mr. Rick Ross, even though they should not be. Now, we know a lot of times in the black community, we don't necessarily respect ourselves, and we're not necessarily paying attention to what's being done to us, the okey-doke. And that's what you have what's going on here. You see, these are not like the women that you would see at Afropunk Fest or something like that. He probably would get run off the stage if he did something like that. Different type of black women, you see. You're dealing with younger people, some of them with Caucasian hair hats in the crowd, that really don't know what's going on and really do not necessarily respect themselves. They might be getting an education, all right, definitely, that's fine. But that internal respect that they're supposed to have, it's not there as of yet. It's just not there. It may never be there. And that's the reality of it. So in my opinion, that's just what's going on. He's mesmerized these fools that are following him. And any black woman of any really real worth is not going to follow a Rick Ross. She's not going to do that. She's going to keep it moving. Give me something else. That's all. That's what's happening.
I don't even know why Tuskegee would even allow this man to be on campus. You know, but I get it. I get it, I guess. But you can't just say, oh, he's popular, and then that's the end of the conversation. What is he saying? What is he saying? I mean, didn't the women at Spelman a few years back get on Nelly's behind for his infamous tip drill video where he faux slides a card down the middle of a woman's behind as if she was a commodity. They weren't going for it then, and he didn't like that either. They never like it when they confront you for something that is inexcusable. You cannot excuse the inexcusable, and yet they do it anyway. They do it anyway, and I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the excuses. Now, it goes even further than that, Captain, because even the hip-hop blogs that discuss this, I believe I sent you a quick blurb from it might have been allhiphop.com, one of these minstrel websites. And that's what they are. This is neo-minstrelsy. Lincoln Perry, a.k.a. Stephen Fetch, even he, and this is the, yes, sir, boss, I'll do it, yes, sir, boss, that's that guy. Even he would say, wow, that's pretty low. The vintage minstrel crew would never have imagined to see what they're seeing now. This is minstrelsy at its best. He says inquisitively, I don't know what this is. But to sing a rape song like it's a joke? Well, anyway, I got to find this actual – it's just a little verbiage from this website. But it really goes to show you that the bar, the standard, has been moved so far beyond our reach. I don't know if we're going to be able to pull it back. The captain and myself, we're trying our best to pull back the standard, to pull back the velvet rope. I don't know if we can do it anymore. Let's see. Give me one moment. I'm trying to find what I sent you. Where are we here? I got to recite this little blurb because it actually makes fun. Let's see. Okay, here we go. It makes fun of the women that I mentioned before that were the first to take a stand against Rick Ross. This is what it says in this, I guess it's this, allhiphop.com. The last statement when they're quote-unquote reporting, the person writes, hell, we didn't wear Reebok either. Reebok may have lost listening to a few square old white women. Laugh out loud. Let me repeat that. This is what's being reported about this incident. Essentially high-fiving what the women did. Hell, we didn't wear Reebok either. Reebok may have lost listening to a few square old white women. So, Captain, this all hip-hop minstrel site says that the women were square and old and white because they don't want to be raped. They don't want rape to be treated casually. Or to be recited like a nursery rhyme. That's it, Captain. I don't know what else to say. I don't know what else to say. Maybe we are doomed. Maybe we are doomed. I don't know. All right. Let's go to another groove. I want to play some new music because it's out here. Again, folks, this is Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk, the Midweek in Review edition. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Don't be scared. It is warm. Oh, boy. It's a hot night because these things had to be said. And I defy patent pending Mr. Michael Crawford for you to deconstruct these arguments. Please deconstruct them if you can. I don't think you can. All right. New music is being made, folks. We will play it. Your minstrel stations will not. Again, this is urban alternative music, acid jazz, black rock, afro punk, everything that conventional radio refuses to play. This is a new jam by the great Janelle Monáe and Erykah Badu, Queen. We'll be back in a few moments. It's a pretty groovy track. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
Okay, give me a little blast of funk, folks. Again, that's a new record, actually. You can get it for, for a price in this one. It's not free. You can get it from iTunes. I did find it at Afropunk. I'm always shouting them out. Afropunk.com has that single. Again, that is Janelle Monae, Erykah Badu, Queen. Give you the very best of urban alternative music, folks. You will not hear that jam, I don't think, on conventional radio because they don't play that anymore. They're not respecting you. They're not going to play you different types of music. So it is what it is. The caller number, again, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We're at the last inning of the Afro Radio Show. And I want to put out some anecdotal data, if I may, Captain. I was listening to a podcast about a week ago. I'm always listening to radio shows, and even though we run our own internet program, I like to listen to what other folks are doing. Whether it's the minstrels or the intellectuals, I listen to everything. And I was listening to, I believe, an NPR podcast, and they were interviewing an author and psychologist by the name of Maria Konnikova. I might send some feelers to see if I can get her on the show. She has a book that I must get, and I would recommend it to our audience because it's all about mind expansion, folks, which is what we attempt to do here. We attempt to propagate critical thinking. Thinking outside the box, utilizing your third eye, utilizing your analytical skills. And there's a book that she wrote called Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes. Now, the show is called Afro Nerd. This Saturday, we're going to have part one of our Grindhouse show called The Comic Shop, where we talk about all things geeky and nerdy. Again, not the monolith, folks. We do, as people of color, we are into comics and the sci-fi and the fantasy like everyone else. So Sherlock Holmes, he's a perennial favorite. They have so many different kinds of incarnations or iterations of Sherlock Holmes. The UK has a program simply entitled Sherlock, and we have our own version in the States called Elementary with Lucy Liu. So Sherlock Holmes, especially within the last 2 to 3 years, is especially a hot property. You can talk about werewolves, we can talk about vampires and zombies, but Sherlock Holmes is right there as far as a legendary literary character or fictional character that just doesn't go away. Anyway, she breaks down
his thought processes. And I thought it was very fascinating. I'm definitely going to get this book. There's one moment in the discourse on NPR where she makes mention of one of the books, one of the Sherlock Holmes books, and it's a conversation between Holmes and Watson. And this quick blurb that she said in this conversation made me think differently. In this piece, this particular book that she references, I'll get more information later on. She says in this conversation that took place between Dr. Watson and Sherlock Holmes, Sherlock Holmes asks Watson, "Do you know how many steps it takes to go to our apartment?" And he looks at him like, why do I need to know that? Like, what does that do? And he couldn't really answer the question. And Konnikova says that many people go through life like Dr. Watson. They look at things without really paying attention. So in this reference to this, to whatever book it was, the Sherlock Holmes book, Holmes answers Watson by saying there are 19 steps that go up to this apartment. He says to Watson, some people look at things, other people observe things. I said, wow, that is how life is. You can look at things all day long. You can pass things in your daily travels, but never really observe anything. The distinction between observation and just looking at something, physically looking at something, it's the width of a mountain. Looking and observing. So just based on that quick brief thing, anecdotally, I got to get this book, folks. I would implore you folks to get it as well, because I think it's about mind expansion, and it talks to a larger issue of observation. And also, who wouldn't want to be like Sherlock Holmes, aside from the drugs and bad violin playing? That's a separate thing. I say that to be funny. But again, Mastermind, How to Think Like Sherlock Holmes by Maria Konnikova. Pick it up. I am, definitely. And maybe I will revisit it once I read it, but I got to get it. Captain, any thoughts? Observation versus watching. Cap.
It sounds very interesting. Sounds very interesting. In other words, most people walk through life with blinders on. That's the reality, put it simply. That's just what it is.
Well, didn't we talk about that last segment?
Yes, we did.
Full circle.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have thunk it? We got about 7 minutes remaining, folks. You know what? We actually have a – skipping around a little bit. I want to have a quick discussion on a blue area moment. We haven't done a blue area segment in a minute. For those who are new to the broadcast, we talk about the blue area moment or blue area segment of Afro Nerd. It's a Marvel Comics device, always the nerd here, where the fictional characters in Marvel can actually breathe on the moon. It's an area on the moon in Marvel Comics fiction where you can actually breathe air. This is what we do at Afro Nerd, where it's not always talking about the negative or unpacking the negative. It's also sometimes you have to talk about the positive and highlight the positive. So recently, President Obama held, this is actually his fourth annual White House Science Fair. It dates back to 2009, and I don't know how well known this is. I don't know how much notoriety he should be getting for this. But I think it's a phenomenal thing to have a White House Science Fair. So it dates back to 2009. It's the fourth year. Over 100 students from 40 plus states stopped by part of their STEM education program, which is the acronym for science, technology, engineering, and math. So this is his way of showcasing talent. So we always talk about what's going down in Chicago, and it's going down. The block is hot in Chicago. But hopefully we see that there's a glimmer of hope. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, and that comes with a Mr. Young Master, Anthony Howman, Anthony Hallman, Hallman, H-A-L-M-O-N. 19 years old, has a full ride to Cornell University. Young father, now you know I would be on top of this. Young father, we make mistakes. I'm glad to see that despite all of the chaos, he was able to somehow maintain getting a full ride to Cornell. Now, it's based on an invention that he had. Being a young father, the invention is called a thermofire, or thermophire, I think. Well, let's say thermofire. A pacifier and a thermometer. Since he's a young father, being able to gauge an infant's health, he came up with this, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, thermofire. Pacifier and thermometer. So because of that, this invention, and also his grades, he was able to garner not only a visit with the president, but also a full ride to the esteemed Ivy League Ivy League institution, Cornell University. So kudos to that young man. Kudos to President Obama for this fourth science fair. I wish it was better known. I think that might be available online to actually see the actual proceedings live here. So it's available to see the actual fair. I think even as we speak, it's online. But I just think it should have been better known. Captain, any thoughts about Mr. Hallman, young Master Hallman, his accomplishments? And, you know, usually I'd be all over, you know, inner city youth. But, hey, he went beyond being a young father to straightening out his trajectory. What are your thoughts?
Well, just as you said, mistakes do happen. Things do happen. Just because you make a mistake, there's no reason to just write yourself off. You just keep on pushing and do what you have to do. And eventually, you can get somewhere. We know what's going down in Chicago. He didn't use the Chicago situation as an excuse. He kept going, did what he had to do, and hopefully we will be hearing more from this man in the future. That's all. It's a good situation. We'd like to hear more things like that.
Necessity is the mother of invention. That's probably how we came up with Afroner. The necessity. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. Him being a young father, this thermofire, thermometer slash pacifier, is ingenious. A great way of calibrating or foretelling a infant's health. So, kudos to Master Hallman. All right, folks, that's it. Tying a hat on up. I got to go to the gym, try to get my mind straight, my body in order. It's been a pleasure. I'm unchained from this point going forward. Thank you, Ms. Renee. No more. I'm going to be a gentleman. I can't stop that. But I'm going to give you a little taste of nastiness when you are being dishonest. When you're being dishonest, I'm going to have to pull your card from this point going forward. I'm not going to pass on that anymore. And that's also Mr. Redding's on notice. Everyone is on notice that if you are going to be phony and disingenuous, I'm going to pull your damn card. Anyway, enjoy your evening. Saturday is the Grindhouse Edition with Daryl B., myself, the captain, at 6 p.m. It's been a pleasure going out on a new jam, shouting out Afro Brits. This is another young woman from England. Harley Blue, enough now. Enough now. New jam. See you on Saturday.
Summer. gave me a